Colossians chapter 2, verse 1. For I would that ye knew what great conflict I have for you, and for them at Laodicea, and for as many as have not seen my face in the flesh, that their hearts might be comforted, being knit together in love, and unto all the riches of the full assurance of understanding, to the acknowledgement of the mystery of God and of the Father and of Christ, in whom are hid all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge. So remember from the previous part, he'd been saying, talking about what he'd been preaching and the mystery, which was hid from ages, how he wanted to fill us with wisdom and all spiritual understanding. And how he labored in this and strove. Some people have said to me, well, you believe in predestination. Why do you talk about striving and laboring? You don't understand. It's like that is our destiny. The first people, the idea of a Protestant work ethic comes from this idea of predestination, oddly enough. Because unlike those who believed in free will and so on and so forth, all of a sudden, what you did, whatever you did, was exalted. If you were a shoveler of muck, then that was your destiny. And it rose that lowly occupation to something more, something God appointed. Now, it does not mean that we are stuck in that necessarily at all. That's not how it works. You look at one of the primary examples of the intrusion of God into someone's life in the New Testament, the Apostle Paul. He was going in a completely opposite direction. He was persecuting the church. And then God turns around and makes him an apostle of the church. A huge change. And I see all kinds of changes in the lives of people in the scriptures. See, what happens is man takes what God has said, and then he puts his wisdom into it. And tries to teach God what it means, what he said. Well, predestination, then that means this. When they don't really know anything. And they need to be instructed again. It's mostly because of their hostile attitude towards the truth. And because they don't want things to be a certain way. Because they have a better wisdom that they don't want to hear it to be a certain way. So they ramp up arguments against it. They fill their hearts with hatred against the truth. And they cannot receive it. Because, as it says, because they received not the love of the truth, God sent the... And the thing is, you don't have to be convinced something is the truth in order to be an enemy of the truth. You just have to hate it. You don't have to knowingly hate it. You can ignorantly hate it. Because he says that because they received not the love of the truth, God sent them a strong delusion that they should believe a lie. Just as he hardened the heart of Pharaoh, so he hardens the hearts of his enemies who do not receive the knowledge and wisdom of God. But to those who can receive it, that's who Paul has this great conflict for. And, what is the great conflict? Again, another struggle, a contention. He means within himself even, because they haven't seen him. These are people, again, who I said had not actually seen Paul ever by the face, but only had heard of him. And other workers had done the preaching of the gospel in Colossae. And also Laodicea, or Laodicea, however you want to pronounce it. He was very concerned that their hearts would be comforted and knit together in love. Unto all the riches of the full assurance of understanding. The full assurance, there is a confidence that comes from the understanding that God gives. People are confident in all kinds of understandings, and they're confident in false understandings too. But with true understanding, you ought to have confidence as well. Nothing wavering. know, those who have that deception, it's like they ought to be unconfident. When they're not, it's a good sign. Perhaps they could hear the truth. But the acknowledgement of the mystery of God. Well, that isn't necessarily the way we would think of, you know, yes, I acknowledge the mystery that God, I acknowledge. And we think of acknowledge it like to recognize in the sense of, you know, I acknowledge you, I really do. You're like as if we were the ones giving something to God. Like we're acknowledging God. Yes, God, we acknowledge you. But it means precise knowledge. It means true knowledge, you know. I like the way he says knit together. You know, you got to think of that idea of like the stitching, of knitting, and of things being woven in such a way that they are become like a single piece of cloth, a single garment. And what is that which weaves the believers together but love? And truly, love comes through fellowship. And fellowship means the things which we have in common, the things which we love each other over. It's not because, well, that person is such a wonderful person, necessarily, though they probably are a wonderful person. But it is because, but the love arises. It's like a familial love from being in the same family, from loving the same things, sharing the same things. The things we have in common in Christ are what really make us bind together. We have the same doctrine. We believe the same. We value the same things. The things that we treasure are the same. You know, that is what makes love strong in Christ. It's not just because, well, we hang out, we watch TV together. That's just a bunch of, that's worthless. That's not, I mean, you might get affectionate for someone on that basis. But that's not being knit together in the love of Christ. And the love of Christ is when I talk to someone, when I go to a brother and I start speaking to them of the things of God, and our hearts are knit together, being of the same mind. You know what I mean? Like, you like that show? Oh, I like that show. Oh, you like that food? Well, I like that food. We really get along. No, no, no.